Christian Home Educators of Colorado is pleased to sponsor the annual Homeschool Day at the Capitol. On Friday, April 3rd, join home educators from around the state as we focus on this year's theme, In God We Trust. Activities include a noon rally on the west steps of the Capitol, workshops for all ages, and the Future Statesman Track. Support homeschooling in Colorado. Doors open at 9 a.m. at the Pillar of Fire Church, 1340 Sherman Street in Denver. Register online at chec.org.
When it comes to protecting the education of their children, many families in Colorado have turned to the Christian Home Educators of Colorado Independent School. The CHEC Independent School lets you educate your children at home without the worry of government regulation and intervention. For a registration fee of only $50 a year, you can school at home as part of the CHEC Independent School, a private school that understands your needs and respects your interests as parents. Don't let bureaucratic hassles and unnecessary restrictions bog you down. Call 877-842-CHEC to receive a free registration packet on schooling at home under the CHEC Independent School. You can also take advantage of CHEC's introductory seminars, conferences, testing centers, and their new resource center in Parker. Visit CHEC online at CHEC.org. That's CHEC.org. Or call them toll-free at 877-842-2432.
Welcome to Generations with Kevin Swanson. Looking at life through the eyes of a biblical worldview, he grapples with the issues of education, culture, and family. He doesn't have all the answers, but one thing is for sure. He is committed to preserving our faith and freedom for the next generation. And now, here's Generations with Kevin Swanson.
Welcome to Generations, my friends. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director of Christian Home Educators. I'm a pastor, but the reason I'm here today, I'm a father of five. My daughter Emily in studio with me, and part of our homeschool curriculum includes teaching our children about God's hand in history. We believe that God has been involved in history and is still involved in the history of our lives, and we're not the only ones to believe this. You go back into our history, folks, you're going to find guys like George Washington, yes, the first president of the United States, who said it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly implore His protection and favor. You think of Ben Franklin, who many consider to be a deist. He said all of us who were engaged in the struggle, that is, the struggle for our war for independence, must have observed frequent instances of a superintending providence in our favor. There it is again, the word providence. And Patrick Henry, there is a just God who presides over the destinies of nations, and He will raise up friends to fight our battles for us. And that came in his famous Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death speech. Our founders believed in this concept called providence. You know, this isn't a word that's used that much anymore. You think about it, Dave. People think it's the capital of a state, but it means something else. It means that our founders considered God's hand to be ever active in the details of men. These guys understood the definition of the word providence, and it's because they knew the 1646 Catechism, the Reformation Catechism that came out of Westminster. And the question was, what is providence? And the answer is, God's works of providence are His most holy, wise, and powerful, preserving and governing all His creatures and all their actions. You see, our founders believed that God has total, absolute control over every element of men's lives and of this universe that He created. For example, they believed that God was in control of the natural or the physical world. Nahum 1 and verse 3 said, "The Lord is slow to anger, great in power. The Lord hath His way in the whirlwind, and the storm, and the clouds are the dust of His feet. He rebuketh the sea, and maketh it dry." See, God says, hey, cut it out, sea, be dry, and that sea is dry. God has total control over the natural world. He has control over the animal creation. Matthew 10:29, "Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing, and one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father?" That is, God's in control of the millions. Maybe it's billions of sparrows that fly throughout our neighborhoods. God is in control of every single one of them. A couple of months ago, we were walking through downtown Denver, and I happened to see a little sparrow dead on the ground there. And I pointed to the sparrow and said to Rebecca Joy, my little daughter who was with me at the time, "Hey, Rebecca, God meant that. God is in total control of every little sparrow, including that one. And that was part of his plan. God is in control of chance happenings. Proverbs 16:33, the lot is cast into the lap. The dice is thrown, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. That is, when you're playing that Monopoly game and you toss those dice right there on the table, God's in control of whether that turns out to be a 2 or a 6. And every single dice that is thrown, whether it be in Las Vegas or in your living room, God is in control of every single outcome of every single dice that is thrown anywhere in the world. God's in control of the tiny little things, but you know what? He's also in control of the nations. Daniel 2:20, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His. He changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding." God sets up the kings. God puts people in place, and God takes them down. I've said this before. I raise a little controversy sometimes when I say God stuffs the ballot boxes, but He does. God determines whether or not John Kerry is going to be president of the United States or George W. Bush. God's in control of every single king that has risen to power and every single king that is taken down from power. Daniel 2 in verse 20. God is in control of individual men. Even the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, He turns it whithersoever He wills. God's in control of the kings and the decisions that they make. That's Proverbs 21 and verse 1. God's in control of the free actions of men. Ezra went up from Babylon. He was a ready scribe of the law of Moses. And the king granted Ezra all his requests according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. That is, God had control over that king, and that king gave Ezra the request of Ezra's heart, because God is in control of those things. God's in control of even the sinful acts of men. You think of the arch crime of history. Think about the most dastardly, most evil act that has ever been committed. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, at Calvary. Listen to what Acts 2:23 says. Him, that is Jesus, being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, you have taken, and by wicked hands have crucified and slain. Sure, it was the wicked hands of men that crucified and killed our Lord Jesus Christ, but God delivered Jesus into their hands by His determinate counsel and foreknowledge. It was His plan to do that. So, ladies and gentlemen, God is in control of all these things, from the sparrows to the kings of the earth. God's in control of these things. This is God's hand in history. And we're going to bring somebody on the program in just a minute, Little Bear Wheeler, who has made it his life to present the active hand of God in human history. For 27 years, Little Bear has been speaking on God's mighty hand in history. He is the author of the book, God's Mighty Hand. He's speaking at our conference on June 15th, 16th, and 17th in Denver. And we want you to be there. But first, you got to hear this. You got to hear Little Bear Wheeler next on Generations, speaking on God's mighty hand. Stay tuned.
Fasten your seatbelt. Hang on to your hat. Generations will be right back.
Christian Home Educators of Colorado is pleased to sponsor the annual Homeschool Day at the Capitol on Friday, April 3rd. Join home educators from around the state as we focus on this year's theme, In God We Trust. Activities include a noon rally on the west steps of the Capitol, workshops for all ages, and the Future Statesman Track. Support homeschooling in Colorado. Doors open at 9 a.m. at the Pillar of Fire Church, 1340 Sherman Street in Denver. Register online at chec.org.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Worldview Radio at its best. This is Generations.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. Good to have you tuned in with us today. We have with us on the phone line Little Bear Wheeler from Mantle Ministries. Little Bear has been working in the area of God's mighty hand in history for some 27 years. He does these historical reenactments, which you just have got to see. Folks, he's coming to the Denver Home Education Conference in June, and he is the author of the book Mighty Hand. Little Bear, welcome to Generations.
Kevin, it's good to be back with you again as a friendship, and I'm glad I could be on your program.
Little Bear, your presentations are great. They are riveting. You bring out God's active hand in history. What are you trying to convey in your presentations?
For years, I started, first of all, as a public school student, typical rhetoric for most public school students, you get up to about colonial period in history, and then you end up graduating high school and you go into your career. And unless you're a historian or going to teach history, you really get not much more. And then about 1979, 80-ish, I happened to run into a good friend of mine named Marshall Foster, who's a Christian historian. I went to one of his seminars. I was ministering in the same area. After I was finished ministering, I went over to see him as an old friend. He's one of my former seminary teachers. And lo and behold, he was teaching the providence of God in Christian history. I'd never heard it. I was thrilled by it, and as a result of that, I purchased his book, and that began my long, lifelong quest of purchasing books from the 1800s, trying to trace down the providence of God in history, because I realized the government schools, what they misinterpret, the separation of church and state, have removed any mention of God in history. And history, as you know, the acronym I like is His Story, and so when you take His out of it, God, it becomes a bunch of dry bones, and that's why most American students do not like history, because they see no hand of God in providence. They don't see his mighty hand working behind the scenes, orchestrating the events of mankind upon this earth.
And when you do your historical reenactment, Little Bear, it just seems like history comes alive, because I think history means something now. There's a hand of God behind it, and we begin to see how his hand works, and it is really exciting. You know, sometimes we see God's hand, sometimes we don't see God's hand. Why don't you give some examples so that folks listening today on the radio can get an idea for how God works in history?
Well, I wear the costumes as a tool that will help captivate all ages, from children to grandparents. And I was, before launching into my ministry as a professional actor, so it was very nice for the Lord to create in me a desire, a skill, and an interest in acting and singing, and then eventually just rolled over as I got born again into drama. So I might do, for example, the life of George Washington. One of my favorite stories is the Battle of Monongahela. And in that battle, he is going against all odds. He goes to the French and the Indians. It's July 9th, 1755. Bullets are flying everywhere. The British are in line formation, fighting typically European fashion. Washington warned General Braddock, the English general, against this foolish maneuver, saying that we're fighting in the wilderness. Bullets are flying everywhere. The men are being dropped left and right. And Washington is in the midst of that fray. General Braddock is mortally shot, dies shortly thereafter. He tells Washington, take control of the battlefield. He's charging everywhere at once. One eyewitness said it appeared as if Washington, Colonel Washington, was everywhere at one time on the field of battle. And then after he evacuates, he has two horses shot out from underneath him, and they slowly evacuate, picking up their wounded, and the Indians swoop in for the kill of the remaining British on the ground, remaining Americans fighting with the British on the ground to rob and plunder the corpses, and that gives a chance for Washington and General Braddock, who's now died, to escape. That night, Washington is near the campfire, and several men come up and say, "Sir, you've been shot four times." And they look over his coat. He's got four bullet holes through his coat. And then he's astounded by that. And so the report had gone out that Washington had been shot four times and mortally killed, wounded, and then killed, died. And so he ends up correcting that report. And I have a quote in my book, God's Mighty Hand, providential occurrences in world history from his own adopted son who after his death of his father in 1799, the father died, and the son in 1833 produced the memoirs of Washington. And in that, the adopted son puts that his father said that that he was divinely protected beyond measure. He said his companions were being leveled on every side of him, and that he felt the hand of providence upon him, and that he realized that God had spared him and singled him out for divine purposes.
You know, that just sends the hair on the back of my neck up, because when I think about how God really does intervene in our lives, we begin to get a sense that God is real, don't we, Little Bear?
Well, history does that. This is why I love history. I tell families who are interested in studying and schooling their children to really concentrate on history. It's the subject that gives impetus to all other subjects. If you get a divine providential perspective of history, it makes you want to then study math and language and other forms of learning, because it inspires you that God is in control. Like you said, he has a plan for your life, that God is in real. God is in your life. And thus, it just makes learning all the much more important. It's real interesting, too. Most people don't realize when communist countries took over satellite nations, like Russia taking over satellite countries, the first teachers they fired weren't math or language teachers. They fired their history teachers, because they realized if they could bring atheistic, godless educators to teach history from an atheistic perspective, they would be able to gain a generation by twisting the minds of children just by the way they teach history. So that's why it's such an important subject.
You know, Little Bear, it's amazing how God works in our history, because our history really goes back even as far as William Wallace and the fight for Scotland's independence. My sister just visited the Abbey at Arbroath up in Scotland. She sent me a postcard. I got it yesterday. And there is the Declaration of Independence written at Arbroath 8 years after the Battle of Bannockburn that Robert the Bruce fought. And this is the beginning of our Declaration of Independence some 400 years earlier. But why don't you talk a little bit about Scotland's battle for independence and God's hand as early as the 1300s in the work of William Wallace?
Well, on the at the conference, as you know, I'll be doing the life of William Wallace in my medieval chainmail and depicting his life. My wife's family was all born in Scotland. I've been over to Scotland 7 times. This year, we're taking a tour to Scotland for the first time, a bus with 50 passengers, homeschool passengers, and touring Scotland. We'll be right at Arbroath Abbey. We will see the Declaration of Arbroath. It's very significant. William Wallace was a man beyond his time. He had a vision for liberty and fought for it, died for it, gave up his life in 1305, inspired Robert the Bruce, the future King of Scotland, to continue the battle of giving Scotland their independence. This declaration was actually sent to the Pope at that time in Europe, and that they were hoping that the Pope would read the declaration, be inspired by it, then put pressure on Edward I, the King of England, to lay low and leave Scotland alone. Edward, of course, ignored the King's decree, and on the way to Bannockburn, he died with his son, the future King Edward II, and it was there at that battle that they lost. When Edward II approached the battlefield, all the Scots were kneeling down in prayer with Robert the Bruce there alongside the various Catholic monks that were holding up their crosses as symbols and praying over the men. Well, at that far distance, Edward II said, "Look, it appears to me that they are humbling themselves before me. It's a bit late for that." And his attending armor bearer said to him, says, "Your Honor, I feel they're not humbling themselves in asking for forgiveness of you, but they're beseeching the Lord, because they know this day they will die in battle before they will ever surrender to the English." And that indeed is what happened. God providentially, miraculously, all odds that were against them, gave Robert the Bruce the victory needed, and that was the beginning stage that eventually led to the Scottish independence.
Ladies and gentlemen, Little Bear Wheeler, he adds some life to history by bringing God's hand back into it. And Little Bear, you know, history textbooks in America, I think, have changed a lot between, say, the 19th century and the 20th century. Today, our history textbooks, for the most part, in the public schools in America, do not assume God's hand working in history. What happened to our public school textbooks?
Well, what happened is at the turn of the century, the Rockefellers, Guggenheims, and various important people that dealt with the type of books that would be put in the government school systems decided that they would only put books that would remove the mention of God and make everything appear secular. I can prove that. I have, in my own personal 1800 library here at the house, I have one book done for public schools. It's called Barnes's History of America by Mr. and Mrs. J.D. Steele. They were authors that authored public school books for over 30 years. They were a little bit like the McGuffey readers or that you would see in the Little House on the Prairie type one-room schoolhouses that went from year to year. All they would do is every 4 years they would change the book by putting the current president and some more information. I have a book from approximately 1888, and in that book it mentions Christopher Columbus's faith. Mr. and Mrs. J.D. Steele talks about he was divinely appointed. He felt led of God to conquer the New World. And then they have the story of Washington praying with a dying man at the Battle of Trenton, which I'll be doing at the conference. They tell the story of Washington being shot 4 times. And then I was in New York several years later going through some old bookstores, and I found again Barnes's U.S. History. So I pulled it off the shelf. I opened up the title page, and there it was, around 1910 or so. And I turned to the Columbus story. It was removed. It mentioned no faith of Columbus. I went to the General Washington praying with a wounded enemy before he died at the Battle of Trenton. That was removed. I went to where he was shot 4 times, and the Indian gave a prophecy. It's called the Indian Chief Prophecy of George Washington. That was removed. And so all mention of anything godly was removed from that text. So I could verify just with documentation the fact that this is true. The school books have been removing the providence of God in history for now over 90 years. So it's been disastrous to our students. They're growing up in a nation that's becoming more and more secular, where God does not intervene in the affairs of men. No one regards God in daily politics and society. And it's going to be the demise of this nation.
And we see the effects of it every day, don't we? Half of marriages ending in divorce. Some 36% of children born without fathers. That's up from 5% in 1960, Little Bear. Our nation is coming apart at the seams. And a big reason for that is the fact that we have removed God from the schools. Little Bear, why don't you talk to parents right now and encourage parents to bring God back into the curriculum, back into their education of their children?
Well, praise God that God has raised up voices crying in the wilderness. I'd mentioned Marshall Foster, the Mayflower Institute in California. They can go on Google and type in Mayflower Institute and get Marshall Foster's books. Of course, all of us know Peter Marshall's writings, The Light and the Glory. I believe those books are still available. The chaplain of the U.S. Senate's son, Peter, went on to follow in his father's footsteps after his death to cover the Christian history of America. And so we have Peter Marshall's books. Everybody knows our dear friend here in Texas, Aledo, Texas, Wall Builders Ministry, David Barton. He also documents and proves much of this as published material. And, of course, our website, mantleministries.com, has the information from our source. We do ours a little bit more on the children level, materials that would be for elementary through junior high. My heart's really to reach the children. These other men do adults, junior high school, and adults. So there's some materials out there that are being republished now, and books that are being available, which is good news.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to bring God back into history. And in the process, let's bring God back into reality, into our children's lives and our lives as well. Little Bear Wheeler, thank you so much for joining us today, Little Bear, on Generations.
Thank you, Kevin. It's been a blessing to be with you all again.
And folks, you can join Little Bear Wheeler at our home education conference in Denver on June 15th, 16th, and 17th. He will be doing historical reenactments on William Wallace, Braveheart, and the Battle of Trenton. and a number of other presentations as well. So join Little Bear Wheeler and myself at the Home Educators Conference in Denver coming up on June 15th, 16th, and 17th. You can check it out at www.check.org on the web. That's CHEC.org on the web. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.
You've been listening to Generations with Kevin Swanson. We look at life through a biblical worldview with a generational focus. If you like this program, you'll love our resource center at kevinswanson.com. You can sign up for a free subscription to our news magazine or shop for great books, gifts, and more for the entire family at kevinswanson.com.
Imagine a summer camp for the whole family. A camp with some great messages that will encourage your family to live and love together the way God has laid out in His Word. Imagine a 5-day camp with some of the best nationally known speakers on the family. A 5-day camp priced from $155. That's $155 for the whole family. We have obtained the use of one of the largest campgrounds in the West for this camp. Scheduled August 21st through the 25th in Glorieta, New Mexico, your family will hear inspiring messages on relationships and loving the family from some of the familiar voices carried on the Generations radio broadcast. And there will be plenty of time for relaxing fellowship, hiking, volleyball, softball, high ropes course, paintball, miniature golf, horseshoes, shuffleboard, frisbee golf, tennis, ping pong, paddle boats, and canoeing. We have priced this camp so it will be affordable to the largest families with the lowest income and a tough economy. To register or just check out a little more information on this camp, visit our website, renewingthefamily.com. That's renewingthefamily.com. This camp is sponsored by Reformation Church, a family-integrated church located between Colorado Springs and Denver in Castle Rock. Call 303-648-9606 for a brochure. You need to register now. At these prices, we are filling up fast. That's camp@reformationchurch.com.
Christian Home Educators of Colorado is pleased to sponsor the 2009 Homeschool Day at the Capitol. On Friday, April 3rd, join homeschooling families from around the state focusing on this year's theme, In God We Trust. Take part in events centered on Biblical Foundations for Government, the U.S. Constitution, and Godly Citizenship. Come to the noon rally on the west steps of the Capitol. Show your support for the homeschooling freedoms Colorado families have defended for 25 years. It's all on Friday, April 3rd. Other activities include morning and afternoon workshops for all ages, tours of the Capitol building, and home education displays in the Capitol Rotunda. Students may also register for the Future Statesman Track and Poetry Contest. Doors open at 9 a.m. at the Pillar of Fire Church located at 1340 Sherman Street in Denver, one block south of the state capitol. Register online at chec.org. That's check.org.